board and staff see and hear, and if you can, give me a thumbs up. All right, everybody's there. This meeting is being recorded. Once President Brooks asked me to call the roll, indicate you are here as well as give permission to record by verbally stating here, permission to record. All right, Lisa.
Okay. I call the February 1st, 2022 Committee of the Whole Meeting of Glencoe Park District to order. Lisa, please call the roll and note the time.
It is 7:01 p.m. Member Boren?
Here, permission to record.
Member Covey?
Here, permission to record.
Member Schneider?
Here, permission to record.
Member Spain?
Here, permission to record.
Chair Brooks?
Here, permission to record. Moving to matters up from the public, it's our practice not to address questions at this time. However, we will take comments under advisement. Is there anyone who would like to make a verbal comment? If so, please limit comments to 3 minutes per person.
I do not see anybody from the public attending.
So. Thank you. So we will move on to the update on fund balance and potential transfer to Fund 69. Lisa Shepherd and John Cutera will lead the discussion.
Great. I'm going to throw this right over to John.
All right. Thank you, Lisa. Good evening, everybody. So just wanted to give an update on where we stand with our projected ending fund balance and how that impacts our ability to transfer over to our master plan Fund 69 capital project fund. So historically, the process for approving capital project transfers has been to wait until final audited balances are available in June. And then at that point, we can determine how much should be transferred. Those amounts are then put into committed fund balance for that fiscal year, which really means that those transfers aren't made until the following year. So if we look back to our most recent transfer, that was actually made in June of 2020, which was our fiscal year 2021. And those transfers were approved at the June of 2019 committee meeting, finance committee meeting. And then once the audit was complete, the fiscal 19 audit, and it was then included in our projected fund balance in our at 228 in the fiscal year 2021 budget. So a little kind of hard to follow, but basically there's a year lag there. If it's approved in June of 1 year, it's pretty much been transferred out the following year. So due to the pandemic in June of 2020, there was no discussion of any transfers being made from the corporate or recreation funds. Later that year, staff did include a $300,000 transfer in the fiscal year 22 budget, since we had a better idea at that point in terms of where we stood with the pandemic. So if you remember back to the June of 21 Finance Committee meeting, my first, that $300,000 transfer was presented and discussed at that meeting, and then that transfer ultimately was made during this fiscal year. So that's just a little background on kind of how it's worked and what the timeline has looked like. And, you know, given that we would expect to have pretty good projections in February, we're proposing that we adjust that timeline so that we can evaluate for the transfers prior to our fiscal year end. So basically now at this meeting in February. And then if approved, those transfers can be made, you know, once the audited numbers are available. So we could certainly hold off until we do have final audited numbers, but we don't have to essentially wait a year. So we still have that flexibility. You know, if we do need to reduce the transfer, which would mainly be if something were to come up during the audit process, we do have that flexibility to reduce it still. But we are making, you know, the transfer within 3 or 4 months of being approved. So in following in that format, you'll see in the packet tonight that we are providing an update on projected fund balance and a proposed capital transfer of $600,000 from the corporate fund and $850,000 from the recreation fund. Again, those will be made once our audit is finalized in June of 2022, typically the time frame there. If approved, the projected ending fund balance then at 228.23 would be 67% in the corporate fund and 61% in the recreation fund. And just looking back historically, the largest transfer that we've made was in fiscal year 18, and that was in the amount of $1.7 million. So this one's $250,000 less than that one, but it still is our third largest transfer proposed in the past 10 years. And a big part of that is the fact that it really represents 2 years of recreation fund transfers. And the fact that we've really, you know, thus far at least weathered the pandemic better than what was initially thought. Our fiscal year 21 operating results in the corporate and rec funds were about $525,000 better than what we had budgeted for. And our fiscal 22 projections are looking even better than that, which again is driven kind of the amount of this transfer. So with that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
I have one question. Are the funds, once transferred, are the funds invested differently? As in, once the transfer takes place, is there potential for higher returns depending on which fund?
No. So it's really just a matter of shifting them in fund balance to be okay. A committed portion of our fund balance. Mm-hmm. In
so
terms of
change where. The cash, overall cash strategy is, it's just the accounting is different.
It's more the accounting. The strategy in terms of liquidity and, you know, managing the actual funds themselves, we take a look at the projects themselves and when we would anticipate those expenditures being made. And that really drives the investment side of it.
I have a question. It seems like a logical thing to do. And I'm just curious historically why there was such a delay. I mean, I think of accounting being conservative, and maybe that's just all it was.
Yeah, I think it was just an element of wanting to have final audited numbers. And then, of course, once you make that transfer, that's when it kind of goes into fund balance to be reserved. You kind of reserve that and then make the transfer. You know, the following year, so that you can assess your fund balance at the end of that fiscal year with those funds already set aside.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else for John?
I just wanted to make the comment that I think as somebody who's used to reading financial statements, I think it's a lot more transparent when you do it in the current year, when your transfer actually takes place in the year that or it's recognized in the year it happens. So if transparency means anything, I don't know, I just think it's better.
Any other thoughts on that? Okay, thank you. Thank you, John. Thank you, Carol. Lisa, were you participating in this at all, or we're done?
Okay, John was giving all the updates on this.
Okay.
So we're
very
thrilled
good.
To be able to transfer that much money towards our capital projects, because we have
a
lot of work to do. So this will help achieve some of those goals.
So just moving forward on the similar discussion on Fund 65, Fund 67, and Fund 69 capital projects, Lisa Shepherd and Chris Liner will lead that discussion.
Great. So the first one we're going to talk about is the AC condenser filters that the board wanted more information on. So Chris, can you give the board an update on what you discovered?
Absolutely. So as Lisa indicated at the December board meeting, several of the commissioners had asked some questions about some potential additional filtration being added to the system. So we did a little bit more due diligence and brought back some information on an MPBI system. This is the same system that we currently have installed in Children's Circle. We installed this at the beginning of the pandemic. As indicated in the promotional material, these systems are getting put in throughout the industry, airports, schools, hospitals, things like that. There isn't really a lot of third-party testing right now to say how much COVID the system eliminates. So if 10 COVID particles pass through, the area, does it eliminate 9? Does it eliminate 7? That information is just not out there. So what we know for a fact is it will eliminate mold, allergens, dust, you know, typical irritants that you have in a system. So this filter is in addition to our existing paper filters that we use and change on a monthly basis. The equipment is a one-time cost. So it's not like it's a UV light bulb that needs to be changed every 3 months or an additional filter. So if we were to choose to proceed with installing this system, we would be looking at, you know, something in the range of about $7,000 to $15,000, depending. They're commercially available. It's not by any means a stretch technology wise. So it really just comes down to if the board is looking to, you know, continue that standard of filtration that we started in Children's Circle. We would be funding the purchase by reducing the amount of R22 purchase next fiscal year. You know, when we originally advanced the budget for board consideration, we hadn't started up the rink. Thankfully, this year we haven't had to add any refrigerant. So we're at a point where our existing stockpile is still very strong. So we can afford, in my opinion, to reduce the purchase by $10,000 or $15,000 and not have to worry about having to close the rink because of refrigerant shortages next fiscal year. So I just would put it to the board for any further discussion.
Yeah, so we just need a direction, what you would like to, if you would like to add that to it. So when we make the final approval, when we purchase all this equipment, that will be included.
It makes sense to do it now. It's a low cost considering the total budget and the fact that you have enough refrigerant and can kind of balance that out. It's a nice option, I think.
What is the chance? I read through the material, and it, as you pointed out, Chris, there's no like definitive proof that this works well with COVID. Any guess as to what the likelihood is that something that was proven to work would come out in the next 12 or 18 months? I'm guessing this company's more established and the science is pretty much there. But do you think there's something that, what's the chance that this could become obsolete in the next 12 to 18 months?
That's a good question. So Bart, this technology was not invented for COVID. So this is a technology that's been out there that has been applied to COVID. So, you know, there are other technologies. I mean, I would not recommend UV light bulbs just because it's a very high cost, frequent item that has to be turned over. They do use UV light filtration. So I think for our application, this is the right product based on the product material. I'm not concerned that this is basically a commercial version of like an ionizer that is in all the classrooms in South School right now. So it's a proven technology. I don't think we need to worry. Putting this in is only going to make our situation better. It's not going to hurt us in any way. And so I'm not concerned with it being obsolete in the next 12 months. Okay. And just for the record, this far exceeds any standard set forth by Pederma or DCFS or the Illinois Department of the Public Health. I mean, this is like the Lamborghini of air filters for a, you know, this type of an application.
And you said this is at South School now?
No. So we have one of these filters installed in Children's Circle on our mass distribution unit. So at South School, they put these units in every classroom. They were donated by a private citizen. So we have them on the entire system. Basically, all of Children's Circle, all of GJK has this filter in its air system versus having individual filters in the classroom that have to be maintained.
Okay. All right.
And Chris, this is the version or the one that is no ozone, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay. So that's critical. Okay. I'm fine with it. Anyone else want to weigh in?
Okay, so I'm assuming that everybody, because I heard from Lisa, a Bard, Stephanie, yes. So I'm assuming that's a yes.
Does anybody on staff have any concerns about it? Yeah, it sounds like
concerns. There's just no proof that it will work for COVID. So we want to make sure that's very clear.
Okay.
You might be spending $10,000 just to make, to really do nothing more than what we have now, but it. You know, there's nothing that would show would hurt us.
I mean, I'm all for optics. As you guys know, I say that term often. I think the optics of this are good. I just don't know if, and I'd love to hear from you know, Stephanie and Lisa and Carol as well. Like, is an extra $10,000 worth, you know, the possibility, the 50-50 possibility that does nothing? Is this a good use of taxpayer money? Is it not? To me, I'm on the fence. because I just don't know enough about this, and I hate to have $10,000 that we could use for other programming. But if we think that $10,000 is going to make three or four more families, you know, come to Glencoe because we have this system, then it's obviously worth it because we'll get the revenue from it. So,
you know, Michael, I can speak to the optics point. So at the height of the pandemic, I got contacted by a group of families that were really concerned that we didn't have individual filters in the classrooms like at South School. So for us, having those filters in those types of classrooms and maintaining them was really, it wasn't sustainable in the long term. Not necessarily the initial startup costs, but the constant maintenance that would be needed to ensure that they actually function would have been tricky for us to execute over the long term. So for me to be able to come back and say that I have this cutting edge technology that we've installed that does the same job as this ionizer in a place that can't be fiddled with by 4 and 5 year olds, that's maintained by a certified HVAC technician, from an optics standpoint, it gave me a very strong position to respond to that letter.
Perfect. Then
but that was in, well, you know, on Devil's Advocate, the other side, that was for Children's Circle, which we already had this system. And so our general population, no one has asked what kind of filtration system, nor would we advertise. We have this filtration system because we really can't prove that it works for COVID. So we won't be saying, hey, we have the system, it'll stop COVID. We would never do that. So the general public will never really know that we have this unless they ask the question. You know, I think we got to ask the question in the pottery room, ceramics room, and then Children's Circle multi-purpose wing. You know, not that I'm leaning either way. It's really a board decision to decide if they want to spend this money. So,
I mean, I read two articles this week of things to learn from the pandemic, and both of them mentioned that having, you know, better filtration and circulation is something that we should learn from that. So whatever we have going forward or whatever illnesses are circulating, like we said, if it helps, this is great. And if it doesn't, it's not going to hurt us. And since we're making these upgrades now, I think now is the good time to just go ahead and do it and spend a little extra. And so that we, you know, we get it done and we don't have to address it. That's my opinion.
Art, Carol?
Question on the it was like 15,000, right, to put it
well,
in?
Well, we're looking at something between about 7,500 and 15,000, depending.
Is most of that the equipment, or is there a significant labor cost to put it
it's,
in?
It's mostly the equipment. I mean, it's probably okay. 4 to 6 hours of labor.
Okay. Thank you.
I just want to get a consensus, Lisa, from everybody, so we know what to move.
Yep. Yeah, I'm fine with it. If this helps Chris and everyone make a few families even more at ease, I think the revenue we get from those families offsets the cost, whether or not it's, it's real or not. I don't think anyone knows, but certainly the optics are going to help Glencoe continue to get their revenue and continue to make families feel safer.
I mean, I guess I'm okay with it too. I think that the concerns that were raised were definitely valid, but you know, if it does, maybe it doesn't help with COVID, but it helps with a lot of other things that are potentially harmful. People with, you know, allergy issues, mold, bacteria, God forbid something were to happen in the building where there was mold problem. You know, I think we'd feel a lot better, a lot less liable if something were to happen with the air quality that we had this system in place. So I kind of see it as a little bit of an insurance for the future too. So it doesn't seem like a huge investment. So I can get on board.
And Stephanie, you're good. Okay. Yeah. And I'm looking at it, honestly, Carol, as long as it functions in the capacity that it's a third party tester has determined it actually is successful in, I'm good. And I don't even know, I can't say that I believe that it has any impact on COVID. If it does, that's a bonus. So good. You've got your answer, Lisa.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Good discussion.
All right.
Okay. The next part of this discussion is we talked at the last committee meeting about AV conferencing system for community hall. So Bobby did a little bit more research because there was a a desire from the board to increase the scope. So I'll turn over to Bobby.
As Lisa said, that the board had requested a more robust system for renters, for special events, and for board meetings. So attached in the packet was a spec from APT, we already have an existing relationship, just to look at what is possible in that area. Initially, we had talked about just putting in speakers and the ability to connect for renters and to have quality speakers in the room. We did add, additionally to that spec, the video conferencing, the wireless projection, the audio, including the wireless microphones and the two-way mics, and a touchscreen GUI system to be able for ease of use. It will allow us to obviously do conferencing. We'll be able to bring in speakers or guests remotely on that. We'll also be able to transmit to YouTube with the microphones wirelessly. It would be a legal bid, and it's not an off-the-shelf item. So you can see the spec was pretty technical, and there probably will be some delays in some of it, and we will need to do some electrical upgrades. So we did recommend, if we're going for a similar spec, putting $60,000 in the budget. Just wanted to get any board feedback on if this is something that you're willing to go forward with, or if you had any comments, or is there any spec missing?
Bobby, where is the, I read through this, I was trying to figure out if I had to total this up somewhere. Is there a total on these?
On the actual spec itself?
Page 4.
$53,177.
Page 18 in the packet.
Got it. Yeah, I think we're not going to just rely on this one bid. We're going to get more bids in this.
Correct.
We have to do a legal bid. Yeah,
we will. But okay. We just wanted to develop an initial scope of the project before we got too deep into legal bids.
Is the camera the kind of camera that shifts when people talk?
That is not one of those cameras, I don't believe. I would have to check the specs. It's kind of a wide angle.
Yeah. That would be the cameras that shift when people talk are really helpful for Zoom meetings in a board style. Otherwise, if it's a fixed camera, like we have it in the office, the fixed cameras, it's hard to talking. I think that was the kind of one thing that I was noticing.
I didn't hear that. What did you say, Commissioner Covey?
It has the Creston display. Yeah, I think. Yeah, you have the Creston Series 4. Okay.
So the only thing, the other element is that with the projector, it would reduce the flexibility of the room unless we were to add additional projectors. So the setup would be a little bit limited. If we wanted to have the full flexibility to move the room around multiple walls, we would have to add additional, potentially a different projector and an additional screen.
Can you say that a little? Where, so this would be mounted on a particular wall?
It would have to be mounted, yeah. It would be a fixed retractable screen, so it would be a pretty large screen. And then the projector itself will be mounted in the ceiling. So some of the costs will be in the electrical, running the electrical to that.
Right. So if we were having a meeting, like our general meetings are facing this way, but sometimes when we've had discussion, it's the other side. So yeah.
So in theory, we could use our portable projector if we have to set it up a special way. But with all that functionality, yeah, we would be a little more limited unless we were to kind of increase the scope of the project.
So if you're sitting normally in the boardroom, you're looking at the doors, mm-hmm. it would probably project on the wall to your right,
yeah.
That big back wall. So for the board meeting, we would just rearrange how we set up the meetings for that particular application.
That makes sense for rentals too, it would seem, because I know food usually is on like the back wall. So
right.
Makes sense.
You would have significant improvements in the sound. I think that is really one feature staff has noticed, especially with rentals. The sound is not great in that room, and especially in board meetings as well.
Do you know, I mean, I know one of our main renters is the Temple. Do they use that room? Do they use audio?
They don't. Hawkfed does not. It's really the one off the mitzvahs, the engagement parties, the weddings, things like that, or special events. There is the functionality too with the screen to start doing indoor movies. I'm not sure what the appetite for that in COVID is, but being able to broadcast and have sound that you can hear much higher quality than what we're currently able to do.
Do you think that other organizations would start to rent this room for their meetings? Like I'm thinking even like there's got to be like, I don't know, local community organizations that would consider.
They do.
And I guess what kind of fees?
Yeah. Not a lot.
The problem with that is the community groups all want it free. You know, yeah. They would charge you a little for those. So that's not where you would not get any money back on this. It's also important to note that during the week, that room is very heavily programmed for ours. In fact, we have hard times. I have to beg for board meetings sometimes. So it's very heavily popular. So really, it's the availability is on Friday, Saturday, or Sundays usually.
Correct.
And then I have another question is, if it's used for all these other purposes, are we worried about the equipment getting damaged? I don't know. I was just thinking about the screen on the wall, and I was thinking, yes, like somebody's going to throw something at it or something.
Yes, yes, reality we are. Yes. So there is going to be a little bit of that with summer camps, and we're going to make it as safe as possible. And there will likely have to be a box, probably a 3x3 box that's going to stick out. The GUI interface, so that the touch screen will be out of reach for, you know, smaller kids. But again, people can mess with it, and then you will have a projector. We don't allow, obviously, you know, dodgeball or anything like that in the community hall. But that's not to say a balloon gets let go and, you know, knocks it out of place.
Yeah, I think those are all good concerns, and any good installer will know how to mitigate some of that stuff. You know, they have TV cabinets that got lockbox projectors or codes and things like that. But it's a good call out. I think the modernization needs to happen. It's something that I see as sort of a, you know, this is cost of doing business in the modern era. I don't see Zoom meetings or meeting, you know, in a way. I see this as being, you know, effectively, hopefully we can reduce some costs by, you know, I think of Ultima New that spends 3 hours to come out to visit us, and they charge us for that. Like, they can spend a half an hour, and hopefully we don't pay for 3 hours of consulting time. So I think this is probably an investment that will pay itself back in a number of years.
I like that way of looking at it. I mean, I know like what we have now does not suffice. I mean, I know it's hard for us to, you know, where to put our meetings on YouTube. I know Jenny does a lot of work with that. I know that we're not like exactly high tech as it stands. So it makes sense. Like when you guys use it internally, if you do trainings there, would you bring in a speaker? Would this make it easier to do that for staff? Or
oh yes, that would absolutely make it easy. That's where we do a lot of our large staff training, especially actually just the sound equipment alone will help with that.
So my question is, are we doing enough? I mean, we asked you to upgrade it. Was this the ABT consultant that kind of put together this package based on his communications with you? Is this enough? Do we know enough that this is what we should have?
So where we're at, during the pandemic, we actually had worked with them to develop to see what options were. And we looked at the basic scope of the audio, which was the 25,000 number we talked about in the last meeting. And then if we were able to conference what that's going to look like. And we worked with him to develop there. He's on the commercial side. He's not on the home side. He's not one of the guys and you walk in to help you. He's on the actual commercial side of the AV business. So we told him the spec, what we're looking to be able to do, and he developed that spec for us. The only thing I would suggest on do we do enough? I think we probably need the up the portable microphones to one microphone per board member/staff. So that will be an additional cost. because these microphones will pick up every single side conversation or comment or sneeze or cough. So they will work on a on-off. So you're going to want to turn it on or turn it off. You can also, on the technology, define where those speakers are picking up sound from. So it's like a full circle or a, you know, a quarter of a circle. So you c- it can actually pick out a certain area where it wants to. So that's pretty cool technology. But I would probably add that, which could add a, you know, $3,000 or $4,000 additional dollars to it.
And then I agree with Commissioner Colby. If we're going to upgrade, why not do the camera that does move?
Correct.
So that's not just a wide pan. So we're looking to see, maybe we'll get both costs on both so the board can decide. So maybe up the budget even more as we go.
So realistically, it's probably a $75,000 line item if we were to put the full spec that making sure we have everything. So I've laid out the functionality. Is there any functionality that I'm missing? So for renters, the microphones, the video conferencing, being able to put, wirelessly present, plug in laptops as well. That's everything we've identified that a need is. So if anybody has anything else, please share.
No, I think
I've got a related question, which is what's the lifespan? I guess I'm always amazed how short a lifespan electronics tend to have. So my guess based on nothing is maybe it's 5 years. Does it? So I'm and then it sort of worked back to like, okay, so it's like $15,000 a year to maintain this. And then when it gets replaced, you know, probably somehow be the same price. Okay, so.
So, you know, Bart, I think it's important to note that there is going to be certain stuff that's going to be a one-time cost. So we're not going to have to come in and put new outlets in the room. You know, so if we have an outlet run for a projector and we have to change the projector, we're not hiring another electrician to come in and run another outlet. And I think as far as the damage to the equipment goes, I mean, this is going to fall squarely under our Pederma insurance. So anything over $1,000 is going to be a Pederma claim. So somebody jumps up and yanks the projector down off the ceiling, that's going to be an insurance claim. So I don't necessarily think we have to be concerned that we're going to be out $50,000 if somebody damages the facility.
I was thinking more obsolescence, just, you know, something new comes along, smaller, faster.
I mean, see technology does go fast, so there's no way for us to predict, you know, and not to say that we always have to have the newest and the best. We could stretch this, you know, as long as it's still functional. So
a projector is a very high quality projector. It's a laser projector. So the bulb would be really the only thing that would need to be replaced. And that's $5,000 of it as well. And then
we're still rolling around VHS carts in the take-in center. So
yeah.
I think I remember watching Snoopy's Thanksgiving on
you did
on a TV.
Yep, a little TV. Yeah. Or a projector on the
or projector.
Wall.
It was not.
I think Bobby's gotten really good at fixing the film strips with scotch tape as well.
Aaron, we are doing more of those type of activities, so it would be very nice. This will be a projector though, so it won't be TVs. TVs we couldn't get big enough. We looked at that option. We'd have to have 3 or 4 TVs to get to the size. But this is a very high quality projector.
A real quick question. If the room is now loaded with expensive equipment, will renters have to pay, I don't know how you work at a higher deposit?
Not
or,
on.
Or
we'll look at that. We haven't had a lot of success. People tend to, you know, not want to spend additional dollars on those items. So I couldn't say that we're going to generate $5,000-$10,000 additional in revenue every year. We're a community center. People are looking for more affordable rentals.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't mean that. I meant that we have a cushion if something is damaged. They've got some skin in the game as well.
Correct. There would be a damage deposit for most of it. Yes.
So that probably
Who's planning a bar mitzvah right now? you know, you are charged extra to use the AV equipment. And so you could probably say if you want to use the AV equipment, there's a $100 charge on top of it. But if you don't want to use it, you don't charge it. Excuse me, when we rent, we have meetings in at hotels, they do the exact same thing. The room is $500. If you want the rental equipment, it's $100 and it comes with, you know, a person that can help you use it. So I think that's certainly a possibility for the future.
Good.
Okay. I did get clarification that it's a pan, zoom, and tilt on the camera.
Nice. Okay. So. Look at you, Bobby, multitasking. See, these are things
right.
You can do with a Zoom meeting.
Are we good then with this, with the additional items, Bobby, for the multiple microphones and the camera upgrade? Is that where we all land on this?
I mean, aren't we just giving Bobby the right to go bid this out?
No, we're not proving the amount, but we need an amount for our budget. So what we're doing, and you don't have to prove it, we're just going to put it into our budget after we discuss it, probably be more at the $75,000 mark.
Right.
And we bring
we don't use it all, but we'll have enough in there.
We'll bring the legal bid back to the board.
Yeah. Right. Not voting, just seeing if there's consensus, and I believe there is.
Yeah, we don't want to do all the work and come back and everybody says, I don't want this. So, you know, so we're in a consensus, we want to move forward with this, and then we'll go out to bid. Good. Thank you.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much. All right. Anything else in this discussion?
Nope. We're good. We can move on to 67 and 69.
Okay.
All right. So we wanted just to, as we slowly march towards the budget presentation, just remind the board of our ongoing capital projects that have already been approved for this year. So Chris, you want to take this away?
Certainly. So as Lisa indicated, we had previously discussed Fund 65, and we just wanted to touch base on the master plan Fund 67, 69. Fund 67 is the bond fees, bond funds, and Fund 69 is the surplus revenues that is transferred. So what we see before us here, first we have the gas kiln addition. So this was something that the board discussed and was tabled. Due to COVID, it was a non-essential purchase and was tabled that year. So we've added that back into the budget.
Chris, it was approved, so it wasn't discussed.
Correct.
It was approved and tabled,
Correct. In addition, we have the crib wall and retaining project. So that, again, that's that Lincoln log wall after the halfway house down to the water plant area. So this is a placeholder right now. After doing some initial development of the project, it looks like the budget needs to be a lot closer to $750,000 to $800,000. We've begun aggressively exploring a partnership with the village. There is a possibility that federal monies that are available to the village of Glencoe that are not available to us can be applied for this project. So we're looking at this as access to the lakefront, and the village could be looking at it as access to the water plant, which is a different type of grant. It's a different type of pocketbook. So right now, the $400,000 that we have budgeted represents 50% of the project, with the village potentially funding the other 50%, or potentially funding the project 100% through a state of Illinois line item grant or a federal infrastructure grant.
And I do know that the village has already talked to their representatives about this, and it's very promising. So.
Again, so this can fall under the water infrastructure, which is just a totally different grant program than, you know, we're eligible for. So in addition, we have the pier. So we have the remaining design fees, the construction that the board has already approved, and then owner items, which is typically, you know, barricades, signage, any type of communication, really anything that we need to purchase for the project that's ongoing during the project. We also have the Watts budget as well. So the design fees include the board approved fees for white. We have the owner items, which right now is the fee for WB Olson, as well as an allowance for the park district to purchase furniture, any type of signage, really anything that we need to do inside the facility prior to opening, things like ice skates or tables and chairs for the program rooms, things like that. The construction budget, that's just a working placeholder right now. We're working with WB Olson and White to finalize schematic designs. We expect to come back to the board, I believe, the first week of March, with a more solid cost estimate, but we have to get something into the budget for the county's process. I skipped over architect design service and consulting, so that really represents three particular areas. That's the potential design fees for the Lakefront Park Court Playground project if we continue to advance that for construction in fiscal year 2023. That's our community survey. Our community survey is the foundation to developing our comprehensive plan, which is a document that's required for ongoing capital project administration and all of the grants that we've applied for and received. So it's a foundational element to being able to compete for grants. And then finally, future financial.
Can I just do a little bit on that, Chris?
Sure.
With the master plan, there is a 10-year cycle on that. So you, when you're applying for grants, they cannot be over 10 years. So
correct.
Our first part will be the community survey, which we're trying to work in cooperation with the village and the school district possibly. Maybe not at the same time, maybe with the same company and do them in tiers. So we're trying to work that out so it's a community-wide, because they're also going through their master plan at the same time. So we will also budget then next year to update our master plan. It won't be as big of a process as it was 9 years ago when I did it, but it will be a process to update that a little bit.
And then finally, there's financial flexibility for future grant application costs and then other future opportunities which might come up. Identified as well as the outstanding grant projects, we have the West Park OSLAD grant. So right now, the Illinois Department of Natural Resources is having a very rough staffing situation. There are 3 full-time employees that work in the grants management office, down from about 15 from 5 years ago. So there's been some significant delays. We don't expect to hear about the West Park OSLAD grant until late into the spring. That will also likely delay any further grant programs towards the end of 2022 into 2023. In addition, we have the PED grant, which is just such a great name, isn't it? Pointing Area Access and Development Grant. So we did have the state come out and visit and take a look at our site. This is for the crib wall project. They indicated that it was not necessarily a strong competitor for the grant, but that they weren't ruling us out as of yet. So is there any particular questions that I can answer?
Can you clarify the line under West Park? If the grant is awarded, each local government unit will fund $550,000?
Yeah, so we indicated that we would partner with the school district on the project. So the initial design that we advanced for consideration for the grant was about a $1.2 million project, $1.1 million. So basically, we would be funding the $550,000 and then getting the grant reimbursement.
I want to let you know as well that the PTO approached me about this project. They heard about a possible bathroom. I explained that that was an optional item that we would love funded, and they are considering that. I don't know
awesome.
How much or what, but just so you know that there is conversation.
Okay, I'll keep that in mind. If we do get the funding for this, that'd be great. That is unfunded in this scope, so.
And again, the state did indicate that this was a very strong competitor based on what they saw.
Any other questions? All right. We're not going to skip a beat and keep on going. All right. With no questions, all this will be in your financial, in the first draft of the budget that's going to be coming up in our prior to our board meeting this month. So can we move to other business now, Lisa?
Yes, ready to go. Other business.
Okay, let me pull this one up here. Let's see if I have this one. I have to share the screen. Sorry. I think I could do this. Give me a second. My technology is so great here. Oh, hold on 1 second. Let's open this. There we go. Can everyone see this? Okay.
Yeah.
So the board, we spoke about the racquet courts at Lakefront Park, and we're moving forward to our community meeting, which will include the racquet courts and the playground. So both of those items will be discussed at the community meeting. What we usually do as a board is if there's a potential layout or option or something that the board really knows they don't want to consider, I don't want to bring that option to a community meeting for discussion, right? Because why give them an option that the board is really not going to consider? So let's focus their energies on what we'll think about. So I kind of want to get a sense, since you've been probably thinking about it for a while, if you want to eliminate any of these options. So the first one was what we currently have, which is the tennis courts. That's layout A. The second one was potential layout B, which would eliminate tennis courts and put all pickleball courts in. Potential layout C is two tennis courts and two pickleball courts. And then potential layout D is one tennis court and four pickleball courts. If you can recall from the focus groups that we held and then the community meeting, there's still very much a desire for tennis in this park. So in our professional opinion, we don't think we should eliminate tennis from consideration, which would mean, in our opinion, the board should consider eliminating potential layout B because that eliminates all tennis courts. So what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with that.
I agree with that.
I agree.
Okay. Okay, so we won't show at the community meeting that layout. There's these two other layouts, potential layout C, which has two and two, and potential layout D that has two and two, or four and two, one. Would you like to eliminate any of these or keep these in for discussion?
Can you go back up to A and B for a second?
Sure. So A's were the three tennis courts, no pickleball. B was the six pickleball courts.
Yeah, B's eliminated, right?
B, okay, so B's out. C is two and two. A little bit for everybody.
So basically, it's basically three tennis courts, two tennis courts, one tennis court, and then pickleball where you can fit in the remaining spot. I think those are fun options. And we're basically saying you have to have, we're going to have at least one tennis court there, and debate is whether it's two or three.
Yep.
Although, do we want to leave A in? Because are we, does anyone not want pickle there at all?
I think you have to let the community probably. You know, Glencove doesn't love change, and there's going to be some people that don't love change, and I think it's good to give them an option. I agree with you, Stephanie. I think, you know, we're going to probably move forward with pickleball, but having, you know, saying that we're going to change no matter what may be offensive to some.
On the other hand, we did have those focus groups.
And there
I'm just going to finish my thought real quick, Michael. And it seemed like a good balance, a healthy balance between the two forces. And we do have no other currently on the schedule courts that we're looking to convert to pickleball. So this is like probably feels very prescient to people. Here we're doing these courts. We really need pickleball. We have no pickleball. That's the only reason why I would say perhaps saying we may not do pickleball is maybe just not realistic. We're going to do some pickleball, and the question is how much.
What's going on with West School? I thought West School was on the dock, or at least in Shepherd. I thought West School was a consideration for pickleball too, wasn't it?
And we get the Osley grant. So remember, we just told you Osley grant has been delayed.
Oh, sorry.
So there's no guarantee that we're going to put that. We would only do that project should we get that grant. So.
No,
there's not a guarantee, but if we do, I think it's two courts, right, Chris?
Yeah. I would personally vote to eliminate A, just because I would really want one, at least one court there, because we don't know what we're doing at West, because West could be delayed, and because we know we're touching these courts. Personally, I would delete A. I see both sides though. But that's just my opinion. Is I think we're going to wind up with at least one court. So why give the potential that there's not going to be any?
So delete B.
I would delete A.
A, delete B, and have the discussion focus, which I think is sometimes easier for people, on two choices, C and D.
I think I would agree with that. I think too that I don't know that the Lakers side is, if you're a serious tennis player, a lot of windy conditions, not the best. I think there was discussion, if I remember, that people were interested in kind of having a place where you could gather, have tournaments, that sort of thing. This will never be a big team tournament league location, but it has the potential to be one for pickleball. So I think it's kind of maybe good to keep that in mind. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I personally wouldn't necessarily rule out all pickleball if we're not going to do it anywhere else. I don't know.
I think our plan is as we renovate other courts, is to turn them into pickleball, you know, add a pickleball court with tennis. So that way in every quadrant, that's kind of what we have tennis courts in. There would also be a pickleball option. So we have tennis court, pickleball, tennis court. Whenever we go to redesign those, I think that's probably the road we're leading down since we did that at West. So just keep that in mind. I think we will eventually do more pickleball. I'm a little concerned if we put 6 pickleball courts in there, the noise, because that's a lot of course, and the traffic that would occur. I mean, we have a really big issue right now with parking, and I think that would really add to it. Because we would bring in a tournament style and they'd stay all day type thing. So
yeah.
Just my opinion.
I agree, because they can play for hours. So
yeah. This is really perceived, this particular place is perceived as recreational residential play as opposed to something more competitive or team oriented. Is that a good way to kind of frame this so that we have some tennis, some pickleball, but not a huge concentration on something that would be more tournament play?
Yeah, I think we've always we don't have the, unfortunately, I know Glenview came up a lot in the focus groups. They had a lot more land to put 6 courts in. They had a big, huge land to be able to service that. We have always been more of the mindset, let's put a little bit in every park so it could be recreational play. So, you know, if you are by West School or you live in that neighborhood, you have a playground, you have tennis court, you know, baseball field, and now pickleball. You know, if you go to Shelton, you know, playground, tennis court, and hopefully someday pickleball type thing. I mean, that's just what we've done in the past. Doesn't mean we have to do it now, but it just seems that we try to spread out our recreation amenities throughout the town.
Lisa, I like C and D, and really admire what the Park District's doing to incorporate new high-quality pickleball courts. One of the things that I had read and had talked to people who are players, I guess pickleball, there's a noise that if you play pickleball, you like, but if you don't play it, it can be intrusive. I also read that there is netting that you can put around the courts where on the fences, which can significantly reduce the sound quality. I don't know how expensive it is. I don't know the durability, but if I think overall with adding pickleball, probably the biggest complaint or concern would be the noise level. And so you, at some point you may want to research, is there a significant noise reduction with netting that you can put up around the courts? And if so, that might get people more interested in D than C. I don't know, but I think noise will be a recurring point of criticism. Anything you can do to reduce that is reasonable is probably worth investigating.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to do investigation on those screens because I haven't seen any data that proves that they muffle the noise.
It's like a solid canvas windscreen. You know, I've seen them in use in a couple of places. I anecdotally, I've heard that they don't do great with high winds. At the lakefront, we don't actually have windscreens at the lakefront. Because of that reason. So we have windscreens at all our other tennis courts, but we don't put them up at the lakefront because historically they had put some up and they all got blown down and ripped prior to mine and Lisa's tenure. But that's the reason that there are no windscreens at Lakefront Park.
Good point. I believe the material I read about also was not designed initially as a outside screen. It was meant for inside insulating, and the company adapted it. That's a good point about the wind at the lakefront.
But again, and that's not saying that the product wouldn't work. I just anecdotally, I've heard that about, that's why we don't have windscreens there right now. But again, the last time that was explored could have been 15 or 20 years ago.
Right. And is, there is noise to pickleball, I'm not gonna lie to you. It's just the amount that, that a person, I guess, could tolerate that noise, correct? So, you know, we have the water feature, we have the trains, those generate noise. It's how much you could tolerate. This park, actually, these tennis courts are the furthest away from houses than any other tennis courts in our system. So, I mean, of any tennis courts, you're going to put pickleball, these are going to be the furthest away from a house.
It's certainly quieter than the sound of a hockey puck hitting the dashboards.
That's a good thing, yeah. Too. Yeah, I mean, which is right next to the houses.
I mean, the feedback that we get, we're at a point where we're going out and we're basically oiling the trains twice a week because of the squeaking. So I think the mitigation is key to do that investigation. But it lies to Lisa's point, these courts are the farthest away from private residences of any courts in Glencoe.
I mean, honestly, I mean, I play pickle. I live by a pickleball court in Florida. I'm sensitive to noise, and I just don't find it noisy. I mean, I don't know if it's because it's a group of four and it's usually a lot of fun, so people are loud, but I just don't find the ball hitting the racket that loud. It's not any louder than tennis, and I know everyone has a different opinion, but I think it's the crowds or the people are afraid of tournaments, and so they say it's loud.
Right. I mean, that's true.
So if I think I've heard from everyone, are we good with C and D as the options? Carol?
Yes, and I was just going to say, I think based on this conversation, I think between the traffic concerns and really looking at this as a recreational, not just from the Park District's mission, but also the wind that we keep talking about, this is really just a place to play for recreation and fun, and that C and D, you have that vision.
Okay, Bart, are you good with C and D?
Yeah, I like C and D.
Okay, Stephanie, you are?
Yep.
Michael?
I still throw A in there. I don't think it hurts, but I also don't think it matters all that much.
So C and D?
No, you can have a 4-1 vote. I'm okay with that.
I didn't hear you. I didn't.
I would do A, C, and D, but since I'm the lone man out, that's what
okay.
It is.
All right. So moving on, C and D, Lisa, you have what you need.
Okay, I'll put that in the thing. Since we a little time, do you want to talk GJHB stipend or not? Because since our finance meeting would be pretty packed.
Okay. GJHP request for $15,000. Has everyone had a chance to kind of consider or review that? Are we ready to talk about it, or we can always talk about it during finance?
I'm going to recuse myself of this because my daughter's on the board of GGHP and is very involved. So I just feel uncomfortable.
Probably a good idea.
Thank you.
Yeah, I recused myself a year ago when I think my wife was on the board. She's no longer on the board. And we don't have any ties to it. So I feel like I can unrecuse myself.
Well, there's still three, so that's okay. I think we're good.
I'm fine.
Appreciate
I don't have any ties to it anymore.
Oh, he hasn't any ties. He can vote.
Okay. Yeah. And by the way, thank you, because as the old lady, old goat on this team, I have gone through multiple rounds of this. And in previous iterations of the board, we've had people who've had really strong ties to various organizations. This one pops in my head. And it was awkward and uncomfortable to have a really good conversation. So I do appreciate that you're both acknowledging that, but there's only so many of us. So does anyone have anything they'd like to say about that presentation and this ask? And can I just quickly, Lisa, I had asked you once before, having gone through this, I feel that the escalation of their request over the past years that I've been on the board, do we have a historical record of what they've asked for and what we've given them over the past, say, 6 years?
It's been mostly $10,000. I think there's...
I don't think so, Lisa. I think there was a big leap. I think it was like I don't know, I could be wrong. I'm speaking out of turn, but we probably should garner that information too.
Let me check to see if I have that.
See if you have it. Carol, did you have anything you'd like to say about this?
I just think they have huge balances for that type of organization. And I feel like we already offer them all of our facilities. I don't understand why they think that they're doing as much for us as they say. I don't know. I feel like we have our own programming. The Park District puts on a lot. There are probably services that they're doing just for their participants and things like that. But I don't know if I see it as a service to the Park District as much as is it as a service to just the participants of that age. I want to say it's like the middle school rather than the Park District. So I guess I just didn't really understand the logic. We're giving them our facilities, our maintenance of the facilities. Why do they need more?
Okay, Bart, did you have any thoughts on this?
I didn't come to any conclusions. GGHP is evolved from when my kids were at Central School, where it was just the play, and now it's much more. And I didn't initially understand why we would give them the money, but again, I think it's a really good entity. And it looked like we had a tradition of doing this. So I would like to be supportive, but I don't, I'm sort of with Carol. I don't quite understand why they need the money, but at the same time, it's a local really good entity. So, I mean, I don't have really strong feelings either way. I guess I'd like to be supportive if it's not too much money, but I have to admit, I don't completely understand the need. But again, there's a leap of faith that, hey, it's a good entity, been there a long time, doing good things. I guess I would lean towards doing it, but I'm not particularly well informed.
John has through his, he's sitting at his desk. Luckily, he can give us a little preview of what we've had before. So, John, would you let the board know how much we've given in the past four or 5 years?
Sure, Lisa. I could go ahead and share screen here. So I don't know. I'm sure that's pretty small. Let me just try to increase it. But this is I'm not sure on the ask itself, but hopefully now everybody can see that. Again, not sure on the ask itself, but in the past, since fiscal year 2016, this is all from our general ledger system, looks like we gave $12,000 in fiscal 16 and 17, and then $10,000 in 18, 19, 20, and 21.
Okay.
I also, I feel that they, and kudos to them. I'm really impressed that they've managed to build such a fund balance that, if memory serves, has not decreased. I don't know why the fund balance is so high, but it's $300,000 for this organization. Just feels extremely healthy. And I think that the Park District does a wonderful job partnering with a lot of our community organizations, including GGHP, and donations in kind is a donation, that there's value to that and value associated with that. And I think that is something that we very specifically can give to them. I think they're very, very talented raising money and generating funds for their organization. And but the Park District's able to give something unique, and that is our assets, our services, our facilities, that kind of thing. And there's a cost associated with that, of course, as well. So I think that that's a really good thing that we can do for them, and that cements our partnership with them. So that would be my thought.
Let me ask this sort of a different way. And again, it's a well-regarded organization, long history. At some point, if the amounts are small enough, there may be some logic in saying, hey, Lisa and staff have done a phenomenal job of connecting well with every entity in Glencoe, including the school district. If somehow we cut off this long-standing tradition of funding them with $10,000 or $12,000, would that somehow, would there be resentment that we don't want, or does it, you know, we've got a big budget, you know, I don't know. I don't want to do anything that would put us at odds with other entities that, that the Park District has done such a good job of building relationships with for a relatively small amount of money. Again, and I don't completely understand the use of it, but it seems like a good cause.
I can tell you that I appreciate the after school program they do for junior high kids. We do not offer that per se during the school year. We offer for kids club, but they usually grow out of that. And so they're offering that and service projects and the ability to, you know, facilitate those service projects. What I don't think we should subsidize or fund is the theater program. We charge for that program here, and it does not operate as a loss. So I don't feel like we should subsidize their theater program, as good as it is. It's wonderful. But contributing to that after-school program, the ability to do some of those service projects to teach, you know, to teach that, I think that's a worthy cause, and I really like that. So I agree with Carol. I think their fund balances are very healthy, and don't think they need quite that big of a stipend. And when we give that big of a stipend, it takes away from our program and our ability to do scholarships and things like that. So while I don't think we should cut them off totally, I agree with the board about, they've been utilizing our facilities and our staff and our expertise, and Nate, they've been working a lot with that. So by keeping on doing that and maybe take their funding down a little bit would be, I think, justified and still develop a great relationship.
So that might be 5,000 or 7,500?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, 5,000.
Okay. 5,000, yeah.
I like that much more than saying we're going to zero.
Me too.
Okay. Thank you, Carol. Are you good with 5? I'm good with 5. And please, other board members who've recused yourselves, if you feel like you really need to add something, I'm certainly going to welcome you.
I did not recuse myself.
Uh-oh.
I did not recuse myself, but I have nothing to add.
Huh. I just have a question, because this is a new director. Like, is it going to be explained to her so she doesn't feel like it's a slight, you know, because I think it would appear that way to her based on the history.
No, I will definitely talk to them and their board and have a conversation with them that this is why. I mean, we've gone through a tough year, too. And
I mean, like, our catering costs are quite as high as we thought, right?
To ask for more money is really hard for us. And while I think we should definitely help with some of their after-school programs, it's the other programs that we offer for a fee that I don't think we should subsidize. And I'll explain that to them.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. And thank you, Michael and Stephanie, especially. I know these things can sometimes be really awkward, and I appreciate everything. So, Lisa?
Is there any
other business?
There is no other business.
Can I just say one thing?
Yes.
I'll forget it in 2 weeks. I use this app called Court Reserve when I reserve courts in Florida, and it's just so easy to use. And I was just wondering if you guys have heard of it, or if we can look into something similar. It's just a really good user-friendly app.
We can absolutely look into it. We are also looking into the new RecTrack module there as well, which will hopefully be equally as simple and user-friendly, considering we also charge for some of the reservations. But I'll absolutely look into the functionality of it.
That's one of the nice things about the new RecTrack, is that they have a lot more of those abilities. Perfect.
Stephanie, I must say, I believe you've been bitten by the pickle bug. It sounds like you were dragged into it and you liked it.
Yeah, it's a lot. It is. It's a lot of fun.
Great.
I think it's great.
Okay, so we will now. Lisa, there's nothing more?
I have nothing more. No.
Okay. So now the song and dance. I hope we're all ready for this. The board will now enter into closed session where no action will be taken. I entertain a motion that pursuant to Section 5 ILCS 120/2 of the Open Meetings Act, the board will enter closed session to discuss personnel as mandated by Section 2.06 5 ILCS 120/2(c)(1). Those present during executive session will include all commissioners. Can someone move that?
Can we wave to Chris's daughter first, and then I move after that? Then.
You know what?
Hey, what a cute little girl.
Hello, sweetie.
Yeah, so
bedtime.
Bedtime.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, any discussion? All right, Lisa Shepherd, note the time and do a roll call vote, please.
All right, it is 8:10. Commissioner Bourne?
Yeah.
Commissioner Covey?
Yes.
Commissioner Snyder?
Yes.
Commissioner Spain?
Yes.
Chair Brooks?
Yes. Motion passes.
All right.
All right.
Give me 1 second. Okay, so the staff can all leave. Bye, guys.
Bye, everyone. Bye, everybody.
Bye. I'm going to get you all set up. And then when you are done, just Jenny had to go home sick, so you will just text me, and I'll come in and switch out the disc.
Sorry, Jenny. Feel better.
Thank you.
So she's there suffering at home. So
I saw her pumping gas today. We were next to each other pumping our gas at the same time.
So just make sure you all say your names and if you can make sure you note the time when you go in and when you go out.
Okay.
That would be very helpful. Right. Okay.
I'm going to stop the recording now, and then I'm going to switch the host to you, Lisa.
Okay. I entertain a motion to return to open session at 9:18.
Second.
Discussion? Okay, Lisa, please note the time and do a roll call vote, please.
Okay, Commissioner Bourne?
Yes.
Commissioner Covey?
Yes.
Commissioner Snyder?
Yes.
Commissioner Spain?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes, motion passes. And now I entertain a motion to adjourn at 9:18 again.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Bourne?
Yes.
Commissioner Covey?
Yes.
Commissioner Snyder?
Yes.
Commissioner Spain?
Yes.
Chair Brooks?
Yes. Motion passed.
Excellent.